The Battle of the GUI. At that time, Microsoft was producing an operating system known as DOS, which it licensed to IBM and compatible computers. It was based on an old-fashioned command-line interface that confronted users with surly little prompts such as C:\right angle. As Jobs and his team began to work closely with Microsoft, they grew worried that it would copy Macintosh's graphical user interface. Andy Hertzfeld noticed that his contact at Microsoft was asking detailed questions about how the Macintosh operating system worked. "I told Steve that I suspected that Microsoft was going to clone the Mac," he recalled. They were right to worry. Gates believed that graphical interfaces were the future, and that Microsoft had just as much right as Apple did to copy what had been developed at Xerox PARC. As he freely admitted later, "We sort of say, hey, we believe in graphics interfaces. We saw the Xerox Alto too." In their original deal, Jobs had convinced Gates to agree that Microsoft would not create graphical software for anyone other than Apple until a year after the Macintosh shipped in January 1983. Unfortunately for Apple, it did not provide for the possibility that the Macintosh launch would be delayed for a year. So Gates was within his rights when, in November 1983, he revealed that Microsoft planned to develop a new operating system for IBM PCs featuring a graphical interface with windows, icons, and a mouse for point-and-click navigation. It would be called Windows. Gates hosted a Jobs-like product announcement, the most lavish thus far in Microsoft's history, at the Helmsley Palace Hotel in New York. Jobs was furious. He knew there was little he could do about it. Microsoft's deal with Apple not to do competing graphical operating software was running out, but he lashed out nonetheless. "Get Gates down here immediately," he ordered Mike Boych, who was Apple's evangelist to other software companies. Gates arrived, alone and willing to discuss things with Jobs. "He called me down to get pissed off at me," Gates recalled. "I went down to Cupertino, like a command performance. I told him, 'We're doing Windows.' I said to him, 'We're betting our company on graphical interfaces.'" They met in Jobs' conference room, where Gates found himself surrounded by 10 Apple employees who were eager to watch their boss assail him. Jobs didn't disappoint his troops. "You're ripping us off," he shouted. "I trusted you, and now you're stealing from us." Hertzfeld recalled that Gates just sat there coolly, looking Steve in the eye before hurling back in his squeaky voice what became a classic zinger. "Well, Steve, I think there's more than one way of looking at it. I think it's more like we both had this rich neighbor named Xerox, and I broke into his house to steal the TV set and found out that you had already stolen it." Gates's two-day visit provoked the full range of Jobs' emotional responses and manipulation techniques. It also made clear that the Apple-Microsoft symbiosis had become a scorpion dance, with both sides circling warily, knowing that a sting by either could cause problems for both. After the confrontation in the conference room, Gates quietly gave Jobs a private demo of what was being planned for Windows. "Steve didn't know what to say," Gates recalled. "He could either say, 'Oh, this is a violation of something,' but he didn't. He chose to say, 'Oh, it's actually really a piece of shit.'" Gates was thrilled because it gave him a chance to calm Jobs down for a moment. "I said, 'Yes, it's a nice little piece of shit.'" So Jobs went through a gamut of other emotions. "During the course of this meeting, he's just ruder than shit," Gates said. "And then there's a part where he's almost crying like, 'Oh, just give me a chance to get this thing off.'" Gates responded by becoming very calm. "I'm good at when people are emotional. I'm kind of less emotional." As he often did when he wanted to have a serious conversation, Jobs suggested they go on a long walk. they trekked the streets of Cupertino back and forth to De Anza College, stopping at a diner and then walking some more. "We had to take a walk, which is not one of my management techniques," Gates said. That was when he began saying things like, "Okay, okay, but don't make it too much like what we're doing." As it turned out, Microsoft wasn't able to get Windows 1.0 ready for shipping until the fall of 1985. Even then, it was a shoddy product. It lacked the elegance of the Macintosh interface, and it had tiled windows rather than the magical clipping of overlapping windows that Bill Atkinson had devised. Reviewers ridiculed it, and consumers spurned it. Nevertheless, as is often the case with Microsoft products, persistence eventually made Windows better and then dominant. Jobs never got over his anger. "They just ripped us off completely because Gates has no shame," Jobs told me almost 30 years later. Upon hearing this, Gates responded, "If he believes that, he really has entered into one of his own reality distortion fields." In a legal sense, Gates was right, as courts over the years have subsequently ruled. And on a practical level, he had a strong case as well. Even though Apple made a deal for the right to use what it saw at Xerox PARC, it was inevitable that other companies would develop similar graphical interfaces. As Apple found out, the look and feel of a computer interface design is a hard thing to protect. And yet Jobs's dismay was understandable. Apple had been more innovative, imaginative, elegant in execution, and brilliant in design. But even though Microsoft created a crudely copied series of products, it would end up winning the war of operating systems. This exposed an aesthetic flaw in how the universe worked. The best and most innovative products don't always win. A decade later, this truism cost Jobs to let loose a rant that was somewhat arrogant and over the top, but also had a whiff of truth to it. "The only problem with Microsoft is they just have no taste. They have absolutely no taste," he said. "I don't mean that in a small way. I mean that in a big way, in the sense that they don't think of original ideas and they don't bring much culture into their product."